Love Sport Radio. On digital radio, online, mobile, and smart speaker. Fast-paced delivery that's sure to knock you for six with former England opening batsman. This is Nick Compton's Cricket World Cup Show on Love Sport.
Yes, it's a very good morning to you, Monday morning on Nick Compton's World Cup Cricket Show. Very excited to be back here with you guys, just watching as West Indies toss up against South Africa. So lots to talk about in that game. It's not raining at the moment down there, so that's a positive. But of course, the big game of the weekend, which was played yesterday, India versus Australia, the biggest game of this World Cup. And I'm delighted to have Matt Floyd with me today. Matt, great to have you on, mate. A lot being spoken about that game. I think the first talking point is Virat Kohli, of course, asking Indian fans not to boo Steve Smith while the Australians were fielding on the boundary. I mean, quite a thing for a captain to do. But let's just go straight into that.
He didn't do anything to be booed, in my opinion. He's just playing cricket. I mean, he was just standing there, and I felt bad because if I was in a position where, you know, something had happened with me and I had apologized, I accepted it and I came back and still I would get booed, I wouldn't like it either. So I just felt for him and I told him I'm sorry for on behalf of the crowd, because I've seen that happen in a few earlier games as well, and in my opinion that's not acceptable.
Well, clearly not acceptable for Virat Kohli. Does he have a point, or does he have a place to tell fans what to do?
Well, look, Virat Kohli, brilliant player. Obviously, I'm you know, you can't doubt that. And loads of Indian fans are probably going to tweet me now after this. But I completely disagree with what he said there. He said Steve Smith hasn't done anything to get booed. Well, of course he has. Steve Smith and David Warner have done everything to get booed. You know, what they did on the cricket pitch, fans have a right to express themselves. I don't think this will last for a long period of time anyway. I think in 2 years' time, they might get booed still at Ashes games. I don't think they're going to get booed when they travel to India, for example. But I don't think Kohli should be telling the fans who they should boo and who they shouldn't boo. That's up to them. It's a free world. Yeah, it's extraordinary, I thought.
Yeah, I have to agree. I found it strange. You know, would he have done that had India been on the back foot? I'm not sure. You know, I mean, it was sort of quite a commanding position. Obviously, Kohli got some runs himself. And, you know, there's been a lot of positive reflections on this, you know, reading on Twitter, etc. You know, people have come in and said, oh, Kohli, what a great man. But I'm not sure I agree with that either. I sort of found that, you know, it's something he could potentially comment on like he has done in the press conference. Yeah. But I think during the game, to sort of tell your fans as if you're, you know, sort of higher and mighty, which I think he does think he is at times, to be honest with you, to keep quiet. I think fans are allowed to do what they want. You know, they've paid the money to come and watch the game. And let's be quite frank about it. You know, Steve Smith and Warner have got to suck it up. You know, they made a mistake. Yes, they have served their punishment. Everyone knows that. But there's always going to be a little bit of backlash. And I think in some ways it almost makes the World Cup what it is. You know, the Aussies are the villains, and, you know, you've got India on the front foot. And I think it brings more to the game. So, look, I think the crowd are always going to get stuck, and I think that's what we like to see at this World Cup. I think coming to sort of the actual game, I mean, if we actually focus on the cricket as such, again, it was slightly strange run chase from Australia. I thought sort of Warner batted in a rather uncharacteristic fashion.
Yeah, I haven't looked at the stats, but it may well have been his slowest ever half century, I'd imagine, in ODIs. He rarely, what was it, 50-odd off 80-odd balls.
Yeah.
And that effectively lost the game for them, really. I know that it was always going to be a stiff chase, but they were needing 10 and over from, what, 20 overs out, which is, even if you got 2-3 wickets only down...
Too much to do.
A lot to do. Yeah, it was an odd innings, almost as if he didn't trust what was coming in behind him. So he felt, well, I've got to be here, I've got to stay, I've got to build a platform. But by doing that, he dug his side into a bit of a hole. And Smith didn't score that quickly either, or Finch. I think they were 30-odd off 10. If you're 30-odd off 10 chasing 350, you're not going to get there. Simple as that.
Well, interesting, just coming in here, Jeff Lemon from The Guardian has said, why, if you had to chase 352 runs at 7 per over, would your opening batsman, who's celebrated for attacking, for start by blocking out 50 balls? Now, look, I can't agree more. I mean, I wonder whether it sort of reflects a little bit about not only his mindset, but also the Australian team. I mean, they look like a strong team on paper in many ways, but Maxwell only came in on the 37th over. And I was reading
that
this
was
morning.
Weird.
Well, Michael Vaughan's comments and KP have gone really hard at them, saying, you know, this has been an absolute disaster of a run chase. And, you know, you've got a guy like Maxwell's got the second highest ever strike rate of any one-day modern player coming in the 37th over. Carey got 50 or something.
And he looked
like
great when he came in, Maxwell, too. He came in straight away, started striking the ball well. If that was England, you compare it with England, Butler constantly gets pushed up the order, doesn't he? Saturday, he got pushed up ahead of Morgan and Stokes. He came in at 4, I think, on Saturday. They're not scared to push him in with, say, 25 overs to go, whereas it seemed like yesterday, Australia just, they were a bit worried about putting Maxwell in too early, which when you're chasing 350, you need someone like that to up the impetus.
Well, Carey hit 50 of 25 balls, which is the fastest World Cup 50 by an Aussie. I mean, you know, these clearly, Carey's obviously come onto the scene a bit, hasn't he? He looks quite exciting. Yeah. He's been quite consistent as well, and he's clearly quite dangerous. I mean, you get him and Maxwell together. I mean, those are the type of guys you want him. But I just wonder, you know, looking at Finch, who's the captain, I do feel there's quite a lot of pressure on him. And I don't know why, but I just feel that, you know, his form leading up to the tournament hasn't been great. Okay, just before the tournament, he's got a few scores. But sort of for a period of time, you know, there was a lot of conjecture over his position. I actually think that Khawaja should arguably be opening the batting. He scored quite a lot. Yeah, I do. I think that's his best place to bat. I've spoken to a few Aussies who know the team well, and they say, actually, you know, he doesn't like number 3. I mean, I know he batted 4 yesterday, but actually, I think he's one of their best openers. And I think that the form that he's shown when he does open the batting is exceptional. So, I mean,
so what do you do with Finch then?
Well, that's a very big question. You know, a tough call could be made. I mean, it comes back, will Steve Smith captain the team again if he has to go? I mean, I don't
think
he's
not banned indefinitely from captaining the side. Warner is, but Smith, I think, was given a 1 or 2 year ban from a leadership role. He can captain the side again in theory.
Well, that's interesting. But, you know, it looks like that controversy sort of follows this Australian team around. But Zampa, the spinner, was caught rubbing his hands on some hand warmers. Was pretty hot yesterday, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know. I suppose he's a leg spinner. So if anyone's going to need hand warmers, it's got to be a leggy. But, yeah, that hasn't been proven yet. I think Finch said that in his post-match press conference, said that Zampa always has hand warmers on him whenever he plays. And it did look a bit like that. But there will be some cynics out there, and this kind of stuff's going to follow Australia around for a while.
Got to be so careful, haven't they?
Yeah. And you were saying, actually, with hand warmers, that when they break, they're actually quite abrasive and quite, well, the kind of thing that
they are,
and I help you if you wanted to do that sort of thing.
Trust me, I've had a few hand warmers break on me, but especially in the April time of the cricket season when it's minus freezing, and you actually are using the hand warmers for legitimate purposes. Not saying they aren't, of course, because, you know, as we know, leg spinners need to keep their hands warm. Yeah. You know, I'm sure there's nothing in it, but when they do break, there's almost this kind of sort of dirty kind of soot feeling in your hands. So, but look, you know, with Australia, they're going to be it's going to be followed around, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's going to be all sorts of things picked up. I mean, they almost need to be whiter than white for a period of time, which can't be fun, really. I think
you feel a bit sorry for them.
Well, you kind of want to get on with it, don't you? I mean, they are a good cricket team, and you almost want this Australian team to go far, but I think just to sort of almost flip it on its head. I mean, you know, a lot has been spoken about. There's a lot of focus on them, but this Indian team look like they're almost the biggest threat to England at the moment.
Yeah, I agree. 100%. They really flexed their muscles yesterday. It was interesting comparing it to the England performance actually against Bangladesh, because they batted in a fairly similar way.
Yeah.
Both England and India. They got over an initial tough period. They had a look, the openers. First 5 overs or so, got themselves in. It was very sensible, saw off the initial threat. In Australia's case, it was seeing off Stark and Cummins. And then they got going, and they scored quickly anyway. Yeah. They were going at 6 and over off 20 overs. And that top three are just run machines. So they set a fantastic platform. Then you've got guys like Hardik Pandya, who's probably striking the ball better than ever before.
Well, he came up to number 4 yesterday,
yeah,
didn't he?
So they were aggressive, unlike Australia, who kept Maxwell in reserve. They pushed Pandya up. Dhoni comes in behind him. So when they have a platform like that, it's just the perfect scenario, because they've got guys who can come in and take advantage, and they look brilliant, I thought.
Love sport. Yep, Welcome back to Love Sport Radio. It's Monday morning and, God, there's a lot to talk about. Australia playing the India yesterday, going down to what arguably is one of the stronger teams, really going to be England's toughest competition. Quote here from Justin Tyler saying, if David Warner cared more about Australia's run rate rather than his individual performance, the Aussies would have won. Yes, he made a 50, but such a slow start proved costly. We've had comments on the booing of course, Steve Smith by Virat Kohli. But again, a lot of conjecture over David Warner and the way he batted yesterday. Going to turn our attention, though, to today's game. We've got the West Indies have won the toss. They've decided to bowl first against South Africa. Matt, a must-win victory, yeah, for South Africa today.
Yeah, and they'll be desperately hoping that the weather plays ball because the forecast isn't great. If they get this game rained off, you could argue that is it for their semi-final hopes. I mean, there will be plenty more rain, I'm sure, during this World Cup. But, yeah, you'd think then if this gets rained off, they're really, really up against it. Interesting team news, actually. I'm just looking at it now. It looks like South Africa have brought back Aidan Markram, which you think was a good idea, to bolster the top order. Just seeing who they've left out. So Buren Hendricks is in as well. They've got rid of Shamsi, so they're just playing the one spinner in Tahir. It looks like JP Duminy has been dropped as well. But for the West Indies, no Andre Russell. So he's out injured. Yeah. Injured. So that's a big thing for South Africa. And obviously they're going to have to bat first in what might be tough conditions. You never know if it's a bit overcast down there, which is what it looks like.
Yeah, it does look overcast. Got the great Michael Holding talking now. God, he would love to have the ball in his hand in a day like this, you know, steaming in with a nice white ball, looking above. Yeah, it does look a bit misty and a bit cloudy and obviously a huge game here for South Africa. I mean, I think Aidan Markram coming in is a great choice. I think him having it being at number three, it does shore up the South African and bolster that sort of top order, which they really have struggled. Umla hasn't been in the same kind of form. You know, we saw him rush for pace earlier. Quinton de Kock's played well. We know aggressive he is and what a record he has in one day cricket, but I thought Aidan Markram, when he has played, has struck the ball quite nicely, so I think that does bolster the attack. I kind of like them going in with a specialist of just Imran Tahir. I think as a spinner he almost commands that place on his own, and I think he almost grows in stature when he's the main man. You know, you saw that in the IPL this year, leading wicket taker. You know, his celebrations, obviously, and his exuberance, even at his age. I mean, it's just, I think, is amazing. I mean, he's played in more cricket teams than I think anyone in the world. You know,
he's 40, isn't he?
Well, it looks like he's making his debut every time he plays. I mean, it really does get you out of your chair. And if there's anyone to be an inspiration for anyone out there, I mean, just watching him play his cricket, I think, is fantastic. And I think he'll revel in that. I think JP Duminy's had his time, if I'm honest. You know, I think it's time to get in some of the youth. You know, the likes of David Miller need to step up. You know, David Miller's had big raps for a long period of time, but hasn't really, you know, we see blitzes of it. We've seen some of it in the IPL, but he's somebody who should be more consistent, surely.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's probably quite a frustrating player for a lot of South African fans to watch. I'm just looking at the screen now, actually, and Lungi Ngidi's been bowling, so which is good news. He's not playing today, but looked like he was bowling at a pretty decent pace, probably, you know, close to 100%. So that's good news. They're going to need him to come back. But going back to the batting, yeah, you're right. That guys like Duminy and Miller have flattered to deceive of late, and that's been a real problem for them, the middle order. You've got van der Dussen there, who's had a good start to his international career, but it's quite a big ask of him, really, to try and hold up that middle order. I think you're right. Bringing Markram back in just bolsters them a bit, and it pushes Du Plessis down the order, who now is a very important player for them, isn't he, in the middle order with no de Villiers. He's the main man, really, in terms of holding it all together in the middle.
Yeah, you sort of feel that Faf du Plessis in a strong batting lineup should be batting five. You know, I think that's where he fits best. But, you know, he's sort of almost your main man. And I think there's been a lot of talk about the South African team. As we know, there's been, you know, what's wrong with the South African team? A very passionate people at home. But, I mean, fundamentally, I just don't think their batting lineup's strong enough, you know. And I think it has brought in this conversation about AB de Villiers. We'll probably be revisiting that every time we speak here because he's such a great player and obviously would have added a huge amount to the South African team. But there's no doubt that South Africa need a win today. I think the West Indians are looking very dangerous, though. And I think, you know, I know Andre Russell's not there. He's been a huge player for them. But this guy, O'Shane Thomas, who's come on the blocks, I mean, he's young, he's quick. you know, that they've definitely got some pace in their armoury, and I think we're going to see some more short pitch bowling, aren't we?
Yeah, that's what they seem to be doing at the moment. Russell as well, it's a shame that he's not playing today. But even Sheldon Cottrell against Australia, that was obviously a very fast and bouncy track up at Trent Bridge, but he was getting it through at a decent pace. I think he got Warner out, didn't he, with one that bounced on him a bit. So they've been really exciting, actually, the West Indies. I think that so far in the two games, they've been arguably the most exciting team in terms of what they've brought. So I really hope that continues. It would be great if, well, for cricket in general, if the West Indies can mount a real charge towards the semis. They'll get a lot of neutral supporting them.
Oh, they will, without doubt. I love the way they play the game.
This is Love Sport.
Delighted to say Derek Pringle is on the line with us, former England all-round. How are you?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks.
What did you make of some of the boos yesterday and all the conjecture over Australia's run chase?
Why were they booing?
They were booing. Why were they booing? I think they deserve it, don't they? The likes of Warner and Smith. I mean, you can't expect to come out in the World Cup in a big tournament like this and have it all your own way.
Oh, a bit of ball tempering, blimey. old hat.
It's old hat, isn't it? Just talking about, obviously, looking forward to England's attack. They've obviously been pretty good and they came back nicely against Bangladesh. I mean, Derek, looking at this bowling attack, I mean, have we got a settled lineup at the moment? I mean, Moeen Ali's batting has been a bit of a cause for concern. You know, Wokes, Wood, how do you fit them all in?
I think ideally they'd like, you know, the insurance of Moeen there at number eight to bat for them. But they were found wanting against the Pakistan at Trent Bridge, you see. Although Moeen actually did bowl pretty well in that game. But Liam Plunkett is such a good bowler in those middle overs that they'd like him, you know. They'd like him to bowl and Moeen to bat if possible, but the two are not obviously compatible. So a few problems to choose, but, you know, as they always say, these situations, a nice problem to have.
Hi, Pring, it's Matt Floyd. How are you?
Hey, Matt, you all right? Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, not too bad. I just wanted to ask you about which seamers you would go in with if you were the England coach. Obviously, you can't pick them all, so you've got Wokes, Archer, Wood and Plunkett. Which one are you leaving out?
Well, I'm not leaving Archer out.
Neither am I.
It's an interesting one. I mean, you can be kind of opposition specific about this. You know, you look at the ones who you think might be a bit, you know, windy is perhaps too strong a word, but a bit suspect against pace and go for Mark Wood. But thing I think against someone like a team like Australia, say they kind of see pace bowling a little bit of pace bowling. They've got some very good pace bowlers of their own. Mark Wood's a little bit skiddy for me, and that can come on nicely if a batsman's in. But there again, you know, Chris Wokes has gone for a few, but he does bowl at the start and at the end. You're going to go for a few if you do that. Mm. It's very difficult, perhaps, to pick between them. And as I just said, that Liam Plunkett, you know, he's got that sort of middle overs,
yeah, he's got a
roll nailed down. You know, he's a clever bowler in that situation, but he can obviously go wrong occasionally, and he'll go for a few. But it's a difficult one. I think, you know, you look at the opposition, and if you think they don't fancy a bit of pace, bring Mark Wood in, and if they you know, decent playing pace, maybe, you know, the extra spinner with Moeen Ali.
Just looking a little bit further afield, of course, we've got the Ashes coming up after this World Cup. And just talking about England's test team, really. I mean, Jason Roy, he's obviously really grown into his role in the white ball form. Is this something that we'll see potentially over the Ashes? Will he come into the reckoning?
Well, he must do, I think, because just purely the lack of anyone else sort of jumping up and putting their hand up saying, you know, I'm a typical opener of the old mould, nice tight technique, etc., etc. These players don't seem to exist these days. David Warner did it. He was essentially a T20 player. He became a pretty good test opener himself, tightened up his defensive technique. Whether Roy can do it, I'm not so sure. I think, you know, it would help if Surrey batted him, open with him in you know, red ball cricket, but they haven't done so.
That's an interesting point, isn't it? He bats number six for Surrey, so it's a big ask, isn't it, to chuck someone into the Ashes into an opening slot, even if he opens in white ball cricket.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think, you know, you could look at it another way. I mean, I'd be happy to open with Bairstow, you haven't seen one day cricket as well, and keep with folks.
Okay, brilliant. Pring, thanks for having you on, mate. Excellent.
All right, pleasure.
Great to see you. We're delighted also to be joined by another England fast bowler, a good mate of mine, Simon Jones, who's on the line. Jonesy?
Morning.
Good morning, mate. I think we should carry this on a little bit. England's bowling attack, obviously a big fan of the quick bowling. You must be enjoying this World Cup, let's be honest. Come on, someone who loved a short ball. I definitely faced a few of them from you, mate.
Yeah. I tell you what, it's just nice to see the attack. It's got all the bases covered. It's such an exciting team at the moment. All right, we had that one loss to Pakistan, but you know, I look at that side and I think at times they're unbeatable. If they get the mix right, then I think they could go on to the net.
Talking about the mix, I mean, who would you go for as that frontline bowling attack?
Cool. I know there's been chat about does Plunkett replace Wokes. No, Plunkett, I think, is an outstanding cricketer. But yeah, for me, when Wokes gets it right, he can make the ball talk. And I think that's a key thing. We've got pace in Wood and Archer. And obviously Stokes does a great job as well. But yeah, I'd always go with Wokes because when he gets it right, he swings it and he's got that control as well that we need at times. So I'm a big fan of Wokes.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to chop and change the team too much. I mean, there sort of comes a point where you need to sort of instill that belief and go, guys, this is our frontline bowling attack. This is what we're going with. I mean, as much as obviously the importance of having a squad, of course, but, you know, as you come to sort of semi-finals and what have you, you want to know what you're going with, don't you?
Yeah, of course you do. And it helps to change your vibe as well. You just want them to be relaxed. You want them to know they're going into a game with confidence and belief in the side that they have. Everyone will know their role in that side. And if you keep chopping and changing, that's when people become a little bit disgruntled. They don't know what they're doing. And that's when mishaps happen in games where you can have losses where they shouldn't have happened just due to lads not knowing exactly what's going on. So the communication between the hierarchy has got to be spot on now. They've got to decide early on what the side's going to be, let people know and let them, you know, prepare for the games as well as they can and go into the game as confidently as they can.
Has Archer given us a bit of an X factor that the attack was perhaps missing before?
Oh, unbelievably. I watched him bowl the other day against Bangladesh, I think it was. He bowled with real good pace.
Looks like he could bowl about 5 mile an hour quicker as well.
Yeah, he's so effortless, isn't he?
Yeah.
He makes it look as if he could bowl all day, and that's what excites me about that guy. He's got that demeanour about him that he doesn't get ruffled. He's really chilled out. He just goes about his business and gets on with it. And I think you can build an attack around him. I know the opposition and the other sides in this World Cup will be thinking, right, Archer's the main man. But then that lets the other lads do what they want to do. They can go into the game and express themselves. Wood can bowl as quickly as Archer, if not quicker at times. So he's another one to really watch out for. Now, Stokes is coming into form, which is amazing news for England. And obviously, only got Wokes or Plunkett. So it's really exciting times for England. And, you know, I don't normally like watching cricket, I hate to admit it. But any chance I get now, I'm watching that England side because they are so exciting.
Yeah, I mean, we're watching the West Indies walk out as we speak, and they've decided to bowl first against South Africa. And they've been quite exciting. I think for you and I suppose for fans around the world, it's been quite nice that there has been a fairer contest between bat and ball. And I think we probably like to see that, don't we? We like seeing fast bowlers. I mean, these West Indians look pretty good themselves, don't we?
Oh, they do. They're a dangerous outfit, then. I think if you underestimate the West Indies, it's going to come back to bite you. They play some real good cricket. They've got some quick bowlers in now. We saw them ruffle up the South Africans, etc. So it's a big thing where you can't ignore a team like that. You can look at England, you can look at India. India were exceptional yesterday against Australia. They really were. They got 350.
Do you think they're the biggest contenders, apart from England,
yeah,
of course?
Them or England. I feel for South Africa, they just look lost at the moment. They really do. They've lost AB de Villiers, which was the backbone of that side. They relied on him heavily to get them out of certain situations. So the responsibilities have lay on the backs of the other batters now. And you know, they're big shoes to fill. They really are. So, India, to me, are looking very, very strong, very organised. Bumrah's a serious bowler. And then they've got the other lads that work around him. So it's them or England for me.
One question. If you were opening the bowling against England, how would you go about it?
how would I go about it?
You know, ball wide.
You know how I go about it, Campbell. I'd stick to what I know. I think the key thing with bowlers these days is you have to act and not react. I think that's the biggest thing you have to do now. You have to try and assume and guess what the batter is going to try and do. It's a tough job now. It really is.
Yeah.
With two men out, etc. And the way the boys play these days, it's a 360 game. And it's frightening the time to see some of the shots that are being played. But with that comes the responsibility of the bowler to develop their game as well. If you're not going to develop your game, then you're not going to survive. And I think that's the key thing.
Oh, well said, mate. And just lastly, are you up to much at the moment? How's your bowling? Are you playing a few games this summer?
I'm trying not to.
Off two paces. You still bowl the same speed, don't you?
I know. I'll be doing some work with the PCA.
Great.
And also I'm working at a school in Cardiff, so that's going well.
Ah, brilliant, mate. Well, listen, always great to catch up and look forward to seeing you this summer. Guys, when we come back, we're doing a regular feature, our Fan Zone. Today we're speaking to someone from the Barmy Army to get their experience of the World Cup so far.
Love Sport.
What was interesting, Matt, just in the break, talking to Derek Pringle about England's Test team, I guess a lot about this World Cup, but there's a lot of cricket to come up, and particularly the Ashes. I mean, you know, it's only a small matter of the Ashes. And the likes of someone like Jason Roy, who looks so settled now on this one-day team, and there must be time now to get him into that Test team.
There's definitely a clamour building for him, isn't there? Purely because of his white ball form. And I totally understand that. And because there's no one else who's really stood up and grabbed the opening spot. I mean, you've got Rory Burns, who's probably the one who's got the strongest claim to a position at the moment. There's no one else really who's nailed it down. Joe Denley played well at number three. He's an option to open, I suppose, as well. You've got the likes of James Vince, who's moved to the opening position because he wants to play in the Ashes, obviously wants to get back into the Test side and has been told that's his best way of getting in. My one concern with Roy is, we mentioned it before, he doesn't open for Surrey. He bats number six. I wonder if that's his best position in Test cricket, because he can come in against an older ball, counter-attack, almost like a Gilchrist would do for Australia. The problem is, we've got plenty of guys who can bat number six in Test cricket. Our problem is guys who can bat in the top three, and can Jason Roy do that against the moving red ball?
Yeah, I will come in and say one thing, and I think there's been a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of people out there, fans and people who watch cricket, and say to me, you know, why don't England just play the same way they play their one-day cricket? Is that a dismissal?
Sorry, he's given him out.
He's given him out. De Kock has been given out, caught behind. He's got one or five balls. He looks pretty confident with the referral.
He's come off his hip, I think.
Yeah.
He's reviewed it straight away. Great catch, great delivery. He's rubbing his arm.
Well, look,
squared him up that.
Well, we'll come back with that. But the one thing I would say when people do ask me that is, let me just say one thing. The red ball is very different to a white ball. You know, we're not playing on these sort of placid grounds with, you know, a white ball that does absolutely very little. So you kind of get caught up in the whole euphoria of this England one day bowling attack or batting side. And you see them dominating cricket matches here, there and everywhere. But actually, when you play Test cricket, the ball does seem around. And it's a very different game. So it's not as simple, just to answer people's questions there, of just getting in. I mean, you could almost argue, why don't we just play the white ball team? They've been so dominant. Yeah. They've been so good. But it is a different game. And I almost said this last year. I said, get Roy into bat at six. I know we've got a number of good middle order players, but I think it's a good way to settle in. You saw Ricky Ponting. He started at number six. You know, Jacques Callis started at number six. A lot of players that came in, you know, and have moved up the order. And I think that wouldn't be a way to go. I think it still leaves the question of who's then going to bat in the top three. And
so do you think Roy's technically tight enough to bat in the top three against the red ball?
I think he is a lot better now. There's no doubt that he's really grown in international cricket. And I think that's the important thing. I think he plays pace well. I think it's worth giving him a go. I don't think we've got anything to lose. We've got Toby Marriott, who's the social media manager for the Barmy Army. Toby, love you to give us some thoughts on the Ashes coming up. I know the Barmy Army are going to be in full force and getting behind this England team, giving the Australians loads of continued boos. is that on the cards?
Morning, gents. First of all, loving the show this morning. Great energy on a dreary Monday morning.
Thanks, mate.
It's really good fun. Yeah, it's interesting, you know, you mentioned the Ashes straight away, and I think that's so often the way on social media and in the radio and in the press. Everyone is so focused on the Ashes that actually they don't talk about the stuff that's just as important. I think I was on the West Indies tour recently in the winter, and even then everyone was talking about this test team and the importance of the Ashes.
Yeah.
So we underestimated the West Indies and ended up losing a test series. And I hope that's not the same thing that happens with this World Cup. Everyone's so focused on the Ashes that we lose sight of the stuff happening right now. I think Jason Roy, you know, you talk about him, he's an incredibly talented player. There's no doubt about that. And I would love to see him in the side, but you're right, it's so tricky. As you know, Nick, opening the innings against the swinging Red Bull in England isn't much fun.
Oh, mate, it's very difficult. Very difficult.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's the toughest job in cricket, opening the batting, particularly in England, swinging Red Bull. And there have been so many players who have been given such a slim chance, you know, a couple of tests, two, three tests here and there, and then been thrown back into county cricket, and the next cab off the rank has been put in. So I think Jason Roy deserves a chance in the team. I just don't think it should be opening up unless they give him, you know, a good run in the side and give him a good chance.
So you would almost stay with the sort of traditional setup of a Jennings and Burns or something like that, and just almost say to them, "Come on, guys, just get better."
Yeah, it's easier said than done, isn't it? I think it's such a tricky job. And we've got such a talented middle order, you know, batting all the way down. You look, you know, it's the same with the ODI team. You get, you know, get four or five out, and then Josh Butler walks the crease, and you're like, bloody hell, how are we gonna survive this as a bowling attack? So if we can somehow manage to get to, you know, even if it's only 60 or 70 for one, as opposed to, you know, 5 for 2, then we can look at building a really strong batting lineup. But who that opening partner is for Rory Burns, I still don't know.
Toby, what are your thoughts on Virat Kohli asking the Indian fans to not boo Steve Smith? Will the Barmy Army be booing Smith and Warner? And do you think you're well within your rights to do that?
It's interesting. You know, Barmy Army are, you know, representative of England fans at home and abroad. But that being said, I don't think we're in any position to tell fans what to do.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with Kohli. You know, he's an incredibly influential figure. Not just in India and around the world. And I do respect him for telling fans to respect Steve Smith. That being said, I'm just going to read you a quick quote from 2013 from Justin Langer's predecessor. "I hope the Australian public give it to him right from the word go for the whole summer, and I hope he cries and goes home."
Stuart Broad.
I think you know that's Darren Lehman talking about Stuart Broad. So the irony of Justin Langer calling on fans to show respect to Smith and Warner.
Good for you.
Is remarkable.
Good. So basically, you've just answered the question. You're going to get on the front foot. It's going to be loud. It's going to be heckles. It's going to be everything.
Yeah, I mean, but equally, you know, we can't control everyone, and I just hope no one takes it too far. And I think, Nick, you know, you've experienced the Barmy Army firsthand. We tend to try and be pretty funny with our chants. We don't, you know, we try not to get too personal and too aggressive, and actually just have fun, and equally we want to support the England team. I know it sounds silly, but you know, Steve Smith and David Warner, yes, they both cheated, but equally they served their time. You know, me as a social media manager for the Barmy Army having this ridiculous job, I've had a lot of fun with taking the mickey out of them, and equally Adam Zampa, what are you doing, mate? I don't care if it's hand warmer, don't stick your hands in your pockets, because you know that can be twisted.
So what you're saying is we're going to get some interesting new songs.
Yeah, some interesting new songs. Going to have a lot of fun with it.
Give us the intro. Come on, little jangle, little jingle.
I couldn't possibly.
No prelude to the Ashes.
You'll have to wait and
wait and see. Listen, obviously you said, you know, sort of getting back to this World Cup. Let's focus on this World Cup, because that's what's going on at the moment. We've got Ahashi Mamla who's trying everything he can to get his team back in it. He's trying to get some runs for his team. I hope he does. He's a fantastic player.
Oh, and, me too.
You know, we do need a South African resurgence. It wouldn't be the same World Cup without it. But look, looking at this England team and looking at the actual World Cup in general and how sort of it's engaged with the public, because actually we've got to look further afield. We've got to look at the legacy of this World Cup. I mean, you know, it's great if England win it. But are we achieving, you know, what a World Cup can? What will be the legacy of this World Cup, do you think?
It's tricky, isn't it? Because we all work within the sport. So for us, you know, it's all there every day, and we're seeing the World Cup and we're seeing the biggest moments because we've got access to them on Sky and, you know, we're able to listen to the radio and all this kind of stuff. Whether it's having a massive impact, I guess I'm not in the right position, you know, the best position to be able to tell. I know on a personal level, you know, 2005 Ashes series, I was 10 years old and I watched every single day of it. And since then, I've played cricket for as long as I can hold a bat because it was on terrestrial TV. And I know that's been a massive conversation at the moment. I'm aware there are kind of short form highlights at the moment at about 2 a.m. but I don't think that quite does the trick. So whether it's engaging the public as well as it could be, I'm not sure, to be totally honest. You know, I'm a massive cricket fan and I hope it does, and I hope this summer does, you know, create a new generation of cricket fans. But I don't know, what do you guys think?
Well, I'm just really watching Cottrell, who's just bowled a bit of a rip snorter to Hashim Amla, who is limping back to the change room. I have to feel for Hashim. He tried to give it the full twirl and hit it over the slips, but only managed to get it to the big, larger-than-life Chris Gayle, who almost made a meal of it.
He held the ball up like he got a
like
fiver.
But, you know, you just talk about engagement with fans. I mean, the way that these West Indians kind of celebrate, I mean, you know, it's just great to watch, isn't it? And I saw George DeBell's tweet earlier saying that the 1 to 2 o'clock in the morning free-to-air television sort of hours view isn't really going to cut it, is it?
No. And that's scheduling.
Yeah, you're right about this West Indies team. Like, obviously, they're so, so talented, and we haven't even seen the best of some of them. Like, Shimron Hetmyer is, I don't know if you've seen him bat in form, but he's astonishing.
Puran looks a player.
Yeah, and Jason Holder as well. You know, not many people talk about Jason Holder, but he's the glue that holds all of these egos together. And you should never underestimate a West Indies team. I love seeing these guys play. And I know, obviously, it's a shame that, you know, if they beat South Africa today, that looks like it's it for the Saffers. But if it means the West Indies progressed in the tournament, then, you know, they're such a fantastic team to watch.
Tobes, thanks, mate. Looking forward to hearing some of the songs in the Ashes. But first things first, let's try and win this World Cup.
This is Love Sport.
It's a dreary Monday morning, it is. But, Matt, the big game I want to talk about was my game yesterday. I strolled out there for my first game of the season. 120 not out, thank you very much. My first 100 at the Getty's ground. Just thought I'd put it out there.
Are you still available for test selection?
Absolutely. Always available for my country. But coming back to, obviously, much more important games here. South Africa playing against the West Indies. It's a little bit of a highlight chat. We've obviously lost Amla early, which is a shame. You know, we know how important he is for South Africa. Markram's come to the wicket. This is a big, big time for South Africa, isn't it?
Who did you score the 100 for, just going back to it?
So John Paul Getty's 11.
Ah, okay. Jazz cricket, was it?
Listen, there were some very good players out there, and the wicket did all sorts. You know what I mean? Absolutely. I had to get through the tough period, got to 50, raised my bat, and then just thought, you know, I'm going to entertain people a bit here.
All right. Release
pulled
the shackles.
Pulled out a few shots. Not that we've seen them for a while, but there were a few hidden away there.
A few that no one's ever seen before. Like like that. I tell you what, we need to talk about celebrations, don't we? Because we saw, just before the break, Cottrell getting out Amla. He got out his fantastic celebration, the salute, which seems to take about 20 seconds to do or something. It's the longest celebration I've ever seen. Do you like it?
I like it. I mean, geez, he's a strong boy, isn't he? I mean, he gets into that sort of army position and you think, I wouldn't want to come up against him in a war or a battle, would you? I mean, he looks like I love it. I mean, look, I do love it. I think, you know, there's a fine line between a send-off and a celebration, and where does that sort of come? But I think as long as you're not trying to get into the face of the batsman, your job's done. You've got the batsman out. You've achieved your goal. You know, what happens afterwards? You see Imran Tahir. He goes for about a 4 kilometre run after he after he gets a wicket. Why you'd do that when you've got to spend 50 overs out there, I don't know. But I think that's what West Indies bring to this game. And I think more teams should do it, actually. But as you say, as long as it doesn't get in the face of the batsman. And but, you know, I mean, talking about his celebration, I mean, the catch that he took the other day. I mean, that was up there with Stokes's, wasn't it?
You could argue it was better because he had to hold his balance and then throw it back in. He did it so gracefully.
In your club days, though, you must have had a few send-offs, surely.
I used to get loads of send-offs because, you know, I'd come straight from doing Cricket AM on Sky and get a first ball duck and would get a send-off. You know, that would generally...
Come on, give us now. I can only think what that was like. Give us a few comments. What would it be?
I got some great ones.
You do?
I got called Charles Colville's gimp a couple of times. That was a good one. I laughed. And then, you know, often you get out there like, you know, report on that, mate. Talk us through that one.
It's all cliche.
I didn't get one on Saturday, but I deserve one. I nicked off third or fourth ball, I think.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, mate, I'm available just to call up away. You never know. I've got my batting shoes back on. Look, I mean, I do think it is something to talk about, but I think more importantly in send-offs, I think now it's, you know, just preluding the South African game. Markram's come to the crease. He's hit a solid boundary off the front foot. He does love that. I mean, he's probably arguably got one of the best cover drives I've seen in a long time. South Africa, 17 for one or four overs. The ball is swinging. It is nipping. It looks quite a challenge out there. Again, going back to this kind of old-fashioned kind of 50-over cricket. Get yourself in and then get yourself going as we just see a big swipe across the line from de Kock to a short ball.
In terms of celebrations, so we've got Cottrell, we've got Tahir in this World Cup, both fantastic celebrations. What's a celebration that pushes it too far? When have you got a celebration that you thought, that's just too much in my face?
I think when they run through screaming and shouting and are looking at you in your face,
yeah,
and then sort of go past you very close. I think, you know, I think Rabada has done that a few times,
yeah,
and he's been, you know, he's received a few driving points for that. I think when you're doing that, it's not nice to see an absolute rip snorter from Cottrell, who's squared up to Cock, who looks like he's a bit of a rat in headlights at the moment. But yeah, I think when someone sort of runs through, they put it in your face, it's aggressive, it's a bit malicious. And obviously when they start getting personal and there's comments made, not sure that's needed, you know. I think the time is done, you're out, you know.
Because you can't reply as a batsman, you're done, you're walking off, you've lost. I always think it's a bit cowardly to give someone a send-off like that.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, some bowlers are pumped up, you know, it gets them going. I mean, you know, James Anderson, you know, he gets that white line fever. There's no doubt that he's had a little sort of whisper here and there to a few batsmen, and a lot of bowlers do that. I think it's, you know, I think bowlers end up sort of regretting it after they've done it. You know, I think the adrenaline carries you forward. But, you know, I think that's the type of thing that umpires now are sort of trying to stamp their foot down a little bit. You know, I do think it's something to watch. But at the moment, I think the balance is quite right. I think the West Indies have got it right. They seem to do it. The sort of celebration there's a smile on their face. So at least there's a warming feeling as a fan. Yeah. There was something mentioned the other day just about net bowlers, and I know that's slightly going off track now from the celebration, but. Just David Warner was batting and whacked a ball back at one of the net bowlers, hit him on the head. I think he is okay. I think he's got sort of minor concussion, had to go to hospital. But it did get him going. I suppose there is a question of, you know, the game's quite, you know, players are hitting the ball harder. You know, should net bowlers be allowed to bowl at some of these top players?
Well, who else is going to bowl at them? I mean, I suppose you've got the seamers in the squad who need to have a bowl. But there's lots of guys who need to have a bat. So you can't just have the bowlers in the squad bowling at them. They've got to have other people doing it. That's why you get guys like the MCC young cricketers at Lords. You get the second team bowlers at, say, Surrey second team bowlers would come down and bowl at the
Absolutely.
International players. You get guys from my club, young promising guys who get asked to come and bowl.
I think it's great, an exciting day for
them.
I mean, if you ask them, Matt, I mean, they wouldn't turn that down for
Absolutely
the world, you know?
Absolutely not. It's their big moment. You know, sometimes they go there, they get some of them out. There's a guy at my club who got Stokes out and he talks about it the whole time now.
Does he?
Yeah.
He's dining on it.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, he's a young guy. He's probably not going to be a pro. That's the moment he'll always remember. As long as they're good enough and they can actually give these guys some decent practice, I don't see a problem with it at all. Look, these things happen, don't they? It's unfortunate.
Yeah.
David Warner hits the ball very hard. He could have hit the ball back at Mitchell Starc and injured him. It just happens.
Too much cotton wool. Come on, too much cotton wool. This is professional sport. This is cricket. If you want to be, the best, you've got to bowl to the best. And look, David Warner, as much as we like giving him a boo, he is visiting that chap in hospital today. So well done, David Warner. That's very good of you, mate. One of the big stories to come out today, Yuvraj Singh has retired from international cricket. I mean, obviously, an Indian hero, someone who's performed incredibly well in World Cups. I mean, it's quite sad to see him go. We know that, you know, he came through a bout of cancer, which was fairly inspirational in terms of how he made that comeback and still managed to come out and perform. I mean, what do we think about him in terms of what do we remember most about him as a one-day player?
I'll always remember the six sixes. Off Stuart
Poor Broad, old Stuart.
2007.
In Durban, Kingsmead, yeah.
Yeah. Incredible moment, that. I mean, you're talking about one of England's all-time great bowlers, and he's hit him for six sixes. That just underlines the sort of talent that Yuvraj Singh had. I think he played 40 test matches, 304 ODIs, which is a staggering number,
yeah.
58 T20 internationals, which is also a high number. Man of the tournament at the 2011 World Cup. That was obviously his big moment, winning a World Cup at home, being the guy that performed for them the most in that particular tournament. Just someone who was so easy on the eye, so great to watch. Maybe didn't quite fulfil his potential in some ways, which is kind of odd to say when he played over 300 ODIs.
Yeah, it's
certainly
a test cricket.
Test cricket, yeah. 40 tests, he maybe could have played more, because such a sweet, that swing, beautiful swing of a bat.
Enjoyed the front foot. Not sure he enjoyed the back foot too much, but enjoyed the front foot, didn't he?
Yeah, but you know, he survived like that, mainly in India. He had a fantastic record in India. He got through, he got big scores, and he got it in a very graceful manner. He could bowl a bit too.
Yeah.
Bowl a bit of left arm spin. So, yeah, I mean, he's up there with the great entertainers for India over the years. Probably not one of their all-time great batsmen, but he's not far off.
Yeah, he was an automatic pick in any one-day side. And obviously, we'll be doing a segment on Yuvraj in tomorrow's show. To do tune in to that at 10 o'clock. I think a little bit of your last thoughts on this game. South Africa getting going slightly, 25 for one or 5.3 overs. Where's this game going?
Well, judging by the first 5.5 overs, it looks quite tough to bat out there. The ball's seaming around a bit, bouncing a bit.
It's great to watch.
It's swinging. Yeah, great to watch. The West Indies have just really brought some fire and aggression with the ball so far during this World Cup. Kemar Roach is back in the side. He's bowling with aggression. Great ball that almost got de Kock out. He was given out and then overturned on review. But usually Southampton is a good place to bat, so it might flatten out. We'll see. It could be what South Africa need. I just hope that the weather plays ball.
Well, South Africa riding the storm at the moment. The gale storm, perhaps. We'll see what he does later on in the game. But I look forward to seeing you guys tomorrow. Please tweet in, come in with WhatsApp, give us some questions. We look forward to seeing you tomorrow, 10 o'clock.
This is Love Sport.